Welcome to Stories for Mormons podcast. My name is Jonathan Kingsley, and I'll be your host. This is episode 1.2. or commentary on the story, The Boy Capsized in the Ocean. Before we begin, I would like to talk a little bit about my intent with sharing listener commentary. My goal is that by your participation, we can recognize that our interpretations of any story or parable will be done through the lens of our own experiences. Thus, each commentary should be allowed space to exist without judgment. Disagreement is almost certain, but that is the beauty of it all. It is okay to disagree and remain in community, which in my own experience I have found to be very difficult for LDS members to embrace. Perhaps if we look at a story or parable as if it were a painting in a museum, there is sure to be a plaque with a description of the painting, yet this description cannot contain all of the meaning that the painting holds within. As each individual looks at the painting, different meanings will be understood. Now, we are more or less socially trained to allow for an individual to differ in opinion on a painting without feeling threatened. You and a friend can differ in opinion, and that is okay. But when it comes to religion or spiritual discourse, the space where two people can come together and discuss differences of opinion seems to fly out the window. Why is this? Do we feel that everyone must have my understanding about religious and spiritual topics? This is just food for thought. But I would like to encourage us all to create a safe place within each of us where a difference of opinion may be welcomed. I would like to thank those who have commented and sent me emails with their commentary. Some gave more of a point-by-point breakdown, while others shared their feelings about the story. Both are valid and respected. I will first share some of the commentary provided by listeners, and then follow up with a little bit of my own take on aspects of the story. The first commentary was written with about 13 discussion points, though only expounded on about 5, and leaves us with some thought-provoking questions. He writes, Point number 2. We get in the first boat as if it is the only boat available. As children to LDS parents, we join the church that is introduced to us as the best or only one. We are swept up into their loving arms, and as their children, we respect and accept their decisions for us. Later, as we develop critical skills, we see details that we missed earlier, and we need a sufficient number of answers that pass critical review. LDS is not alone in this process. Parents of all faiths face a similar challenge from their children. Wise parents will not remove their love when a child decides to pursue another worthy path. A parent and LDS others, such as brother, sister, cousin, friend, neighbor, should value that journey. In allegory, the fisherman is too intent on rescuing you, believing that all other options are inferior to his. Point number 4. Gaps between fisherman's advice and your direct observations. This is a tough one for any church to weather in an age with a literate and college-educated membership. A few churches quash it, with policies against advanced education for its members, i.e. Jehovah's Witnesses and others. Yet LDS has education goals embedded within its doctrine, and it's difficult to impossible to persuade membership to dig for deep answers on academic topics while avoiding some church topics, i.e. polyandry, translation methods, racial issues, kinderhooks, others. I personally struggle for understanding within this space. Point number 7. Fisherman declines your request to exit easily, so you jump overboard and you are injured in doing so. And also, point number 12, the female captain's acceptances that other boats can help with rescue and maintains her sense of peace that she will do as able and allow other boat captains to do as they are able. These two, number 7 and number 12, are paired. I will review them together. As an allegory for the LDS Church, the fisherman resists the passenger's request to leave the boat and hinders his ability to do so. Eventually, the passenger is injured while leaving, allegory for the pain felt by some former LDS who leave the church and feel marginalized in doing so. Amish, Jehovah's Witnesses, Scientology, and some other churches have formal shunning policies requiring church members to disassociate from former members. LDS does not have formal shunning. However, I am sad to learn of anecdotal examples of it. One case is too many. Absent formal shunning, I feel that many LDS do some form of passive-aggressive shunning, or more likely, shunning by default, as many LDS focus their attention on current church members and away from former members. In the allegory, the female captain rescues some and understands and accepts that other boat captains rescue others. She does not form a sense of ownership over those that she helps. Further, she does not face anxiety that she must save everyone. She works steadily, progressively. She enjoys and accepts the task before her. She does not begrudge the task, nor does she stress over it. The outcome does not adversely affect her mental health. In like manner, LDS should not feel anxiety when neighbors do not join the church, and should support family, friends, and neighbors, including former LDS, whose lives are enriched by any good path. Point number 13. She acknowledges that her boat is not the final destination, the land is. This item reminds me of the 1984 General Conference talk by Ronald Pullman and the request by LDS headquarters that he edit and refilm the talk. See those keywords in YouTube for details. In brief, his original talk was interpreted by some listeners to give permission to graduate from the church once they had transcended a need for it, and they could pursue another higher path. Other listeners did not interpret the first edition talk in that way. The second edition talk removed any ambiguity. Its message was clear: stay in the church, and when you arrive at a high point of understanding, then lead others to achieve the same level. I heard both editions. Both had a similar message. I liked both. Nevertheless, we should ask ourselves, should a church last forever? Will church reach into the afterlife? Does God use churches, as his tool to help his children to achieve a high and distant goal? Or is church a continuing entity that God also lives within? In allegory, the boat is the church, land is enlightenment, heaven or afterlife. The next commentary shares personal feelings that were brought up by the story. This listener says, "The analogy hit home with me. I've been led this way and that by everyone in my life. People that believe in something so strong can be very convincing to the curious and desperate. I've been both curious and desperate. Curiosity implies a compulsive need to find an answer, and the desperation comes from feeling inadequate and seeking truth to feel whole or important. I've felt these things for so long. Every boat has moldy crackers and floaters in the water. I got to a point in my life where I just said, I'd rather swim. And you know what? I'm alive and happy. Life is still hard, but I've given up on chasing a solution to the minuscule problems that everyone claims they have answers for. It's like everyone blows the difficulties in life out of proportion because they can't handle the fact that life doesn't owe them jack. Animals don't know any better. They take the hand they were given and do the best they can not to die. Sure, they don't understand the concept of death, lucky them, but it is still the same concept, and we just have an extra layer to deal with. Life is too short to constantly be seeking answers or comfort from a reality that offers absolutely nothing of the sort. I don't even care if I drown, because right now, in this moment, I feel lucky just to have existed for even a split second. If folks feel the need to search from one treasure map to the next, I do hope they find the jackpot." This next listener says, "First boat seems to imply the current LDS church. Second boats seem to imply a better version of either the LDS church or even another church. Which church would I rather be on? Well, the second one, duh. Since we touched land and still live to tell about it, then it must mean that we actually get to partake of the fruits or fulfill the purpose of getting on the boat in the first place within our lifetime. What partaking of the fruit actually means seems to vary within our interpretation of what enjoying eternal life might be. I no longer see enjoying the afterlife as an objective. I expect that to be a consequence of enjoying the present life here and now. If I can't do that now, then what guarantees will I have to enjoy it later? Does living by a set of rules bring more joy in life than without them? Does breaking the rules allow me to feel more fulfilled and enjoy life more? Will heaven be restrictive or liberating? Can you show me which is the best ship to be on, or is that one of our own making? While I think it's great to live true, authentic lives, this is best done not in isolation. In my own commentary, I would like to address one aspect that draws my attention, the idea of order and disorder or chaos. Oftentimes, the ocean or sea is a symbol for chaos. The boy, having once been in a boat, is now capsized, perhaps by life. He is now in chaos floating around. This can be a scary place to be if you have never been there before. So scary that he fails to notice any other boats on the water besides the one that comes and picks him up. This boat can represent order, and the boy is feeling better now that there is some order in his life. But as he discovers, not everything is what it seems. His questions are not answered, and he becomes anxious. Perhaps there is too much order on this boat, which is the idea of do as you are told. When he asks to get off, he is not allowed. Again, overwhelming amount of order, which in this case, and many cases, leads to authoritarian rule. So he jumps out. Well, he is now back in the water, or chaos. Yet he doesn't seem to be so desperate and afraid this time. This time he looks around and sees all kinds of boats. He now flags one down that he has decided looks like it could help him. He returns to order. It seems that life is a balancing act between this chaos and order. I don't want my use of the word chaos or disorder to be seen as a negative, but as a necessity. Chaos is the place of potential. Potential that has not yet been given order. We as humans can enter into this place and create many wonderful things out of this chaos. The more we visit this place, the less scary it becomes, and the more we want to spend time there. It is a balance between chaos and order where peace can be found. Thank you for listening to the commentary episode of The Boy Capsized in the Ocean. Some listener commentary has been edited for readability, but the content has not been altered. If you enjoyed hearing the listener commentary, please let me know by the comments box in this episode or by emailing me at storiesformormons@gmail.com. Thank you to all those who also have shared their commentary. Stay tuned for next time for episode 2, The Prodigal God. Thank you.